Voyant is the evil corporate entity behind Linkerd. We just extract, like, what people use Linkerd for financial transactions and stuff, and we just, like, siphon off pennies from each of those transactions.
No. I'm trying to think of a relevant quote from Office Space right now, and it's not coming in, but somewhere, you know. Hello and welcome to Committing to Cloud Native, the podcast where we talk about committing, open source, cloud native, and everything in between. Very excited to introduce our guest today. Before we get to introducing him, I want to introduce the other panelists. So besides me, Richard Littauer.
Hello, everyone.
We also have Justin Dorfman.
Hey, y'all.
And our guest today is the CEO of Voyant. Super exciting. One of the creators of Linkerd. William Morgan. William is calling in from his house, I assume, because COVID, in Austin, where he lives. And he's been doing several teams and building product-facing backend infrastructure for a while. He's worked at PowerSet, worked at Microsoft, Adapt.tv, Meter Corp, contributing to open source for a score of years, over two decades. So definitely battle weary and scarred, I can tell from the video feed. William, how are you doing today?
Hi, Richard. Great. How are you? Thank you for that very grand introduction. Usually my introductions are like, ugh, and here's William again.
Yeah. You forgot one company, which is Twitter. And I knew you worked for Twitter before I even looked at your bio. You know why? Because you had at WM. Now, I know three other folks from Twitter that have OG, as they're referred to, Twitter names. Fat, MDO, and Craw, which is Chris Anishek, who is part of the CNCF. So full circle.
Yep. And actually, you know, everything that we're doing today with service meshes and Linkerd and all that stuff actually came out of Twitter. So, you know, it ended up being a pretty defining part of the story, at least my little story.
Can you tell us how you got started there? How did you go from Twitter to Linkerd to the hat you're wearing today?
You know, I was a Twitter user before I became a Twitter employee. And at some point, I was just like using this thing so much. I was like, oh, I should go work there. It seemed to be growing. This was maybe 2010. And so I started out at Twitter actually as a kind of on this team called the Relevance team, because I had a background in things like machine learning and natural language processing and a bunch of stuff that in 2010 was not very cool. Now is super cool. So I started out there and I kind of gradually shifted from that world over to the infrastructure world. And I left all that stuff behind and I haven't like looked back at it since. And yeah, I guess Twitter was going through this crazy transformation at the time. Obviously the company was growing, you know, it's like I was employee 200 and something. And then by the time I left a couple of years later, you know, they were in mid 3000s and I'm sure they're much larger now. But the infrastructure was changing. When I started, there was this monolithic Ruby on Rails app called the Monorail. And by the time I left, we had replaced that, or almost replaced it, with this massive, what we would now call a cloud native architecture, even though it wasn't built on Docker, it wasn't built on Kubernetes, wasn't even built on containers. But those same principles basically translated to kind of what the rest of the world was starting to do as well.
That was with Mesos, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, you know, at that point, Mesos was like a grad student project from Ben Hindman. And it basically got productionized at Twitter. And it was this big orchestrated environment, which was new to me. I was like, holy crap, what is this? So we didn't really have Kubernetes. I think Kubernetes was just starting in 2014 or 13 or something, just kind of getting off the ground. Mesos was like the big transformative thing. And we didn't have containers. We used the JVM and we used C groups. So you kind of got isolation and you got like packaging. And then we didn't have the word microservices. So we just called it an SOA. And we kind of knew that wasn't a good word, but it was the only word that we had. We were breaking things up into these JVM-based microservices.
So service-oriented architecture, if I'm correct. SOA, got it.
And it was great. When I started, Twitter was falling over all the time. And people, it's like it became iconic how much it sucked, right? It's like down all the time. And then by the time I left, it actually more or less gotten sorted out, which was crazy because that kind of thing never happens. Like this giant company-wide initiative. First of all, initiatives, always a bad word. And the fact that anything worked at Twitter specifically was always kind of doubly amazing. So by the time I left, it actually worked. And there were all these layers of technology that we had built, perhaps naively. We were like, okay, well, here's Mesos. We're going to turn that thing into like a real system. Okay, and now we have to worry about how all of these new services are going to connect to to each other. Suddenly we've got all this new type of traffic. So we're going to invent some libraries to like handle that traffic. And one of the libraries was this thing called Finagle. And Finagle is what became Linkerd, although the modern Linkerd has no more Finagle in it at all. But all of those lessons, kind of horrifying lessons that we learned in building out that big distributed architecture, are the genesis of the service mesh.
So Linkerd was a fork of Finagle?
Sort of. So Finagle was a library. It was at Twitter and it was like mandated. Okay, if you were building a new service, you'd use Finagle. And Finagle was basically, the promise to you was, it was a functional programming library in Scala for making RPC calls, right? And that was like, that was what Twitter needed. And so you as a Scala programmer at Twitter, you'd be like, well, I want a flat map over the results of whatever. And under the hood, Finagle would talk, you'd do this service discovery and talk to Zookeeper. And then it would like do request retries. And then it would do load balancing based on like the latency event. Like it was doing all this stuff and it was doing it both on the client side and the server side. So when Oliver, who's my co-founder, Oliver Gould, and I left Twitter, he was the one who was like doing a lot of Finagle maintainer. I was just a consumer of Finagle. But you know, our genius idea was like, hey, here's this thing that's super, super powerful. Like it basically made this architecture work for Twitter, but it's like, it's a Scala library for functional programming over RPC calls. Like no one wants that, but we could wrap that thing up in a proxy. And forget about the programming aspect, forget about functional programming, forget about Scala, like just wrap it up as a proxy, get the operational benefits. And at the same time, containers were coming along. We were like, oh, we could put it in a container. And like, then no one even has to know the horrible fact that it's on the JVM. But yeah, that was like the first version of Linkerd was Finagle in a box, was what we called it. It was like Finagle in proxy form in a container.
Got it. I don't know if you talked to anyone at Twitter anymore, but have they moved more to a modern cloud native stack, or is it kind of the same sort of JVM, all that other stuff, which I think if it works really well and I'm a heavy Twitter user, then they should definitely keep that. But I'm just curious.
I'm really out of the loop at Twitter. I know that there's parts of it are adopting Kubernetes, or that's the rumor that I heard, but yeah, I got no idea. At this point, I've been out of Twitter for far longer than I was in Twitter. So this was a long time ago. I kind of said, oh, we put it in a container and like no one has to know that it's a JVM. But actually people didn't know that it was a JVM because it took 150 megs per proxy. Despite every effort put into squeezing that thing down, the JVM is great at scaling up. It's really bad at scaling down. So at some point we basically rewrote Linkerd entirely. Got off the JVM, got off the Twitter stack, no more Scala, no more Finagle. And the modern Linkerd is totally, totally different from the, I mean, same heritage, but it's written in Go for the control plane and Rust for the data plane. And like, it's a fraction of the CPU and memory cost and much faster and so on.
I have a dumb question. I'm new to the cloud native space, even though I'm on this podcast. So when you say put things in a proxy, to me, a proxy is something I use to hide my really cool web searches for really cool things. So could you explain to me what you mean by put things in the proxy?
Yeah. So here we get into like, what is a service mesh and why is this even a thing? So the idea is that all that functionality we were talking about that Finagle was doing, like all the operational stuff, right? Like retries and timeouts and load balancing, request level load balancing and the metrics and instrumentation, all of that is functionality that you want. And the way that Twitter got that was it mandated and said, hey, everyone must use this library for all client and server communication. And that's one way to do it, but it turns out it's often a very hard way to do it. Like, especially as the company grows larger, if you're writing microservices, they end up being in different languages, they end up being run by different teams, written in different frameworks. And so there's all sorts of reasons why the mandate approach doesn't really work. And even if you can mandate it, it's still kind of annoying because every time you want to update that library, you have to redeploy everything, rebuild it, relink it, and so on. And so by putting stuff into a proxy, basically we move from that compile time binding to runtime binding. So we say, hey, the way that this is going to work is all those features, we're going to put them in this little tiny transparent proxy. We're going to stick that next to your application. And then your application is making all these calls and it doesn't even know that it's there. I'm like service A and I'm talking to service B. And actually that call is transparently going to go through the proxy and the proxy is going to do a bunch of stuff for me. That way, I can add features and I can own these platform layer features because I can do this at the platform level. I can then own, you know, and manipulate and kind of do that stuff at the platform level without the developers having to be involved. So So that's a very long-winded way of like saying, yes, adding proxies everywhere sounds crazy. In fact, it is fairly crazy, and it only became slightly less crazy with the advent of containers and Kubernetes and so on, because they reduce the operational cost of this sort of thing. But what it gives us is this flexibility and gives us this organizational decoupling where on the platform side, I can implement retries everywhere or mutual TLS everywhere, and the developers can do their business logic and we don't have to have dependencies on each other.
So I'm looking at your sweatshirt. I know what Linkerd does. What does Buoyant do?
Buoyant is the evil corporate entity behind Linkerd.
Cool.
Yeah. And so we just extract, like, what people use Linkerd for financial transactions and stuff. And we just like siphon off pennies from each of those transactions.
No. I'm trying to think of a relevant quote from Office Space right now. And it's not coming in, but somewhere. You
know. No. So Buoyant is a company behind Linkerd. And a lot of open source projects, I think, start at kind of larger companies as a as an offshoot or something tangential to the business model. For Linkerd, we actually started it at Buoyant. We said, okay, there's this idea that we have for an open source project. How is an open source project going to be successful? Well, the best way to be successful is to have a commercial backer that is funding this project. And so let's start this company called Buoyant. We will make Linkerd. We'll turn it into a proper open source project. Right? We're not trying to keep it just to ourselves, but we do need to have like a commercial entity to pour resources into this to maintain the project and to keep it going. So that's
how did you manage that? How did you deal with governance issues when you first started out? How did you make sure that it wasn't just Buoyant setting the roadmaps for the project?
Part of it was deciding what we wanted out of Linkerd. There's different models of open source, and there's arguments about which ones are good and which ones are bad. But you could look at a company like HashiCorp, which has lots of open source projects, well loved by its users, do lots of cool things, but they can maintain control over that. It's not really an open project. And kind of on the opposite end of the scale is something like Kubernetes, where it's like, hey, we're purposefully trying to be as vendor inclusive as possible. And for Linkerd, I think our thinking was we wanted to be more on that side, more on the Kubernetes side than on the HashiCorp side. But it is difficult for a small company. It's difficult for a startup, for an ISV, you know, independent software vendor, to really get that kind of multi-vendor buy-in. So we said, okay, we're going to make it a CNCF project. It'll be hosted by this neutral foundation. We don't own the trademark, and the IP is like kind of collectively owned by the Linkerd authors in general. But those were explicit steps that we took because we said, hey, for Buoyant, we don't want to make money from Linkerd directly, or rather, we don't want to sell Linkerd Enterprise. We don't want to have like a commercial version of Linkerd that we withhold features. And that is a way of doing open source, but it didn't fit with what we wanted from the project. That's a long way of saying it was an intentional choice on our part, and some of the actions we took to make that choice happen, we're becoming part of the CNCF.
We're in the same boat. Reblaze, is the company I work for, is in the same boat. We recently released Carry Fence and donated it to the CNCF. It's a sandbox project. And I love your site because I am on it all the time, seeing different ways I can make our site a little better.
Linkerd.io?
Yeah.
You're stealing our ideas? Those are copyright the CNCF.
Yeah, no, it's my boss and I, Zuri, we were like, okay, next edit this site at the bottom. Like,
yeah. And you could just fork the repo, like, and just, search and replace Linkerd with Carry Fence. It's open source. Yeah.
No, I know. But I
really like the background color, the FFF. I think I'll use that for some of my sites. You know?
That's a good one. FFF, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just cool that there's a project that's in the incubation phase as you are, that we can go and say, hey, this is how they're doing the community stuff. This is how they're doing the blog. And then we really like where you have Enterprise. And then Buoyant is the only company listed there. But the fact that you can create a pull request and add more, it's getting to the point where I do LIN, you're almost coming up to LinkedIn in my browser. Like, it's almost there. So we're not copying, we're stealing. And we're really proud of it. Speaking of which, you are in the incubation page. I've been hearing rumors all over the CNCF landscape that you are pushing for graduation. What does that mean?
We put up the official pull request a few weeks ago.
What are the next steps to get there?
I think there's basically like four steps or five. I don't know, depending on how you want to divide it. So it's number one is like put that pull request up there, which anyone could do at any point. Like you could do this for Carry Fence today. And then the pull request sits there. And step two is find the corresponding SIG. So there's a CNCF set of SIGs and have them do an initial review, which is that's the stage where we are now. SIG networking, the CNCF SIG networking is taking a look at it. And then after that, I think the steps are get a TOC sponsor. So someone on the CNCF TOC basically has to like advocate for it. And then there's a due diligence process. Then there's like a vote and public comment period, which maybe are different or the same. I don't know. So we're on step two of like four or five. And the later steps, I think, are much longer and scarier than just putting the pull request up there. I think we're ready for it. I think we're ready. It's not going to be a shoe-in for interesting reasons, but I think we're ready.
How many companies do you think are using Linkerd in their stack?
Gosh, I wish I had a great way of answering that. I'm guessing it's in the many hundreds, but that is a guess. How do we know when someone uses Linkerd? Well, basically, we know when they tell us or when we find out about it in other ways. At some point, someone pointed out that if you curl some of the WebEx API endpoints, you see like Linkerd headers in the response.
Nice.
Like, oh, really? Linkerd powers WebEx. But, you know, they didn't talk to us. They never told us. We would not have known anything about that except someone accidentally like curled a header somewhere. So
right.
It's that kind of stuff. A lot of it is they come into the Slack channel, the community Slack, and they're like, hey, I have this thing. Can you help me with it? And then I'll like look them up in LinkedIn and say, oh, really? You work at blah, blah, blah. Are you using Linkerd? Yes, we are. We've been using it for years. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, would you like to add yourself to adopters.md so that we at least can talk about it?
Right.
So,
I'm seeing a swag link on the website where if you add yourself to adopters, you get a t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
So that's, see, another thing I'm going to steal. Uh-huh. Thank you, Richard.
I mean, it's like bribery. I'm like, you're just kind of blatant about it. I'm like, hey, I will send you swag. Like, I will pay money to buy swag and send it to you if you add yourself to adopters.md. And like, on the one hand, it's annoying that we have to do that. On the other hand, like, I love sending people swag. So that's kind of cool. And then on the third hand, it's really important for us to know who Linkerd's adopters are. And it's not a natural act for you as the adopter of an open source project to like go and add yourself to the adopters. I've used like a million open source projects. I've never added myself to the adopters, I think proactively to any of them. This is one of the difficulties, I think, for open source projects. There's some interesting tooling that's coming up that is starting to address this. Things like Orbit and Savannah, but this is a struggle for any open source project.
Well, I haven't used Orbit. I know the two guys that Patrick and Josh created it. I worked with them at Stackshare and great guys. And I really look forward to using their product one day once our community gets a little larger.
It's pretty cool. But it can only capture that fraction, the like tip of the iceberg there that is involving themselves in like some activity. Oh, Linkerd has some issue and I have to go talk to someone. The vast majority of users are just in the iceberg part that's not the tip, the butt of the iceberg that's under the water. And we just never know about it.
Real quick, I have a friend that basically indexes a bunch of headers from, you know, top 1 million Alexa sites. And we'll see if we can pull some. It's just Linkerd is in the
header. Yeah, it's like there's a Via header.
Okay, Via. Know, okay, via cool. Linkerd.
And you're not supposed to expose that publicly. It's like, it's kind of an information leak. So
yeah, no, I get it.
Actually, just to tell you something else that's kind of amazing / horrible, we found that out about WebEx. We're like, oh, awesome. Cisco's using Linkerd. That's great. And then, so we put the Cisco logo up on Linkerd.io. Like, I'm basically like, hey, if I find out about it,
right,
I'm putting it up there. And then they sent us a request. They're like, take that down. We didn't give you permission. I'm like, dude, it's a fact. So they're like, no, sorry, can't use our logo. And they're like, okay, but Cisco, you're part of the CNCF. You're like a platinum member or whatever.
Right.
Like, nope, yep, sorry, can't do it. So
that's so funny because they're users of CuriFence. And we have them on our front page, but we asked them. I mean, that was before my time.
Wait, you asked them?
They're customers of Reblaze and they're also adopting CuriFence. So
So you have like a commercial relationship where you're like, we're allowed to use your logo as part of this.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess. But either way, I have some contacts there. So there's two action items for me here. I got to get to the data for the Via Linkerd. And then what was the other one?
Give me that logo. Give me that Cisco logo.
Oh, yes. Yes. Get that Cisco logo.
And then get swag and steal their swag, right? Steal the entire front page.
Exactly. And then
It's cross-pollination.
Yeah, find and replace all day.
So adopters.md is a really cool idea. I haven't seen that in a lot of projects. In fact, I can't think of a single one besides yours. I know contributors.md is a thing. Funders.md is a thing. Contributing.md is a thing. All the MDs, right? Doctors everywhere. Yeah. What do you do to help make the open source community for Linkerd thrive? What does Buoyant do as far as community management? How do you incentivize user engagement? How do you make sure that people go beyond just putting themselves as adopters?
Adopters, in my mind, is pretty high up there. So mostly what it comes down to is having a place for the community to go to that they know about. For us, we use Slack. It's like not great in a lot of ways, but there are things that are nice about it. We're thinking about moving to Discord, blah, blah, blah. Like, are there some open questions about what should that place be? Should it be forums or should it be something else? And then it's about, for Buoyant, we just try and be really active in there and make sure that whenever someone is in there, we're like welcoming and friendly. And there's a line you have to walk, I think, between being the customer support person, where it's like, yes, I will always help everyone with every single thing. Sometimes people are in like these complicated situations because their Kubernetes cluster is busted. And it's like, sorry, like I'll give you my guesses, but you know, you're going to have to figure this one out yourself. But having someone there and be present, so it's not an empty space. And then I think the last component there, which is the hardest to get right, is just communicating to people and giving them ways to know that they can be active in the community. It doesn't have to be this one-way thing. They can answer questions. Like, Linkerd is just as much their project as it is ours. The moment they use Linkerd, they are an official Linkerd community member, or even read the docs, right? You're officially a Linkerd community member. And we've just started doing this Heroes thing, Linkerd Heroes, where
Sergio.
Yeah, that's right. Sergio was one of our recent Linkerd heroes. And it's not like a super complicated process. We kind of eyeball who this month has just done something that we think is kind of cool and like put them up in the set of nominees, ask everyone to vote. And it's like a bit of a popularity contest, honestly. It's like, who can tweet about vote for me the best? And then give them a LinkedIn. We actually have a LinkedIn badge that you get now. So you can put it up as like a LinkedIn credential. It's just like this process of recognition. Hey, you did something cool. I want to give you the ability to show off that you've been recognized for that. So it's systems like that. And like, do something cool. It's not add yourself to adopters or like necessarily contribute a PR. That's the hardest sort of thing to do. But it's even stuff like help other people or give a talk or just do anything that we think is kind of in support of the community.
My dad was in the awards and recognition industry. And like JD Power, for instance, gives out these awards. And there's people that create commercials about they had got a JD Power award. So those very low friction ways of getting folks in the community getting the recognition for things that are doing besides just code, which I think is very important. I think this is a great thing. Another thing that we're going to steal from you.
Does JD Power, is your dad also named Justin Dorfman? Does JD Power mean Justin Dorfman Power? I just have to
be yes, clear yes, yes. The jig is up. No. I was just saying anytime someone gets some recognition, it really just, their self-esteem goes up more. Productivity, they become a brand advocate and they talk about Linkerd and how awesome the community is. So I get it.
Just like with kind of choosing what kind of open source project you want, I think choosing what kind of community you want is also something that you have to be intentional about. And you have to decide, am I like a customer service role and like it's my project and I am helping answer your support tickets? Or is this like a real community thing where, hey, we're all in this together? Yes, Buoyant's pouring a bunch of money into this thing. We don't own it any more than you do. It's like a CNCF thing. And depending on which end of the spectrum you are there, the way you're managing and trying to build the community is different. But this is like the whole point of open source. Why are we doing this? Why are we opening up all the code and like going through all these hoops and having to do everything in the public and whatever? It's because the whole point of open source is that you have this self-reinforcing community. And that is bringing Linkerd to the rest of the world. They're like infecting the world with Linkerd. That's what I want. The final thing I'll say is that I think it takes courage to introduce Linkerd into your environment. I think it's true of many projects, but Linkerd especially is, it's not a trivial thing. And where it sits in this kind of critical part of your stack, it's not off to the side, like doing something. And like, if it sucks, you remove it. And hey, it's in there. It's like wired up to the skeleton of your application. And I know that the moment you put the service mesh in, the moment you install Linkerd, you're like on the hook whenever something breaks, we're like, oh, service mesh. Oh, probably Linkerd. Where's the guy who installed Linkerd? Where's the lady who like jammed Linkerd into here? Where's the service mesh person? They broke this thing. And that's unfortunate, but that's kind of what happens. So I want you to feel like if you're going to advocate for Linkerd in your organization and you're going to put yourself kind of on the line, I want you to feel like you're part of something that's big and you're part of a community and like, we're here for you.
So your ethos is awesome. The fact that you wanted to go infect the world is awesome. It's clear that you're really passionate about it. It's clear that you've done really awesome stuff. You switched from JVM to Go and Rust. I'm really excited to know, where are you going? What's up next for Linkerd? How will you better serve the people in the open source community? What are you looking forward to there besides graduation from CNCF, which will in itself be awesome?
Yeah, I think basically we're moving into Curie Fences space and we're just going to like absorb all those features.
Great.
And yeah, take it on. Yeah, I don't know. Seems like the natural progression.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just want to tell you, give you a heads up.
Yeah, we're go for it.
So I think there's still a lot of stuff we have to accomplish with Linkerd. I think we're in a really great spot right now and I'm really excited about graduation and all that stuff. And I love the fact that adoption continues and that people are so enthusiastic about Linkerd. That's really gratifying to me personally. But there's so many more things we have to accomplish with it. There's a whole set of releases we're mapping out now around things like policy and authorization. And like basically Linkerd right now says yes to every request. If I'm A and you're B and like I want to make a connection from A to B, Linkerd will do its best to make that thing happen. There are cases where you want to say no, like that's not allowed. So how do you quantify that? How do you enforce that? What's the relationship between that and like other projects in the ecosystem? That's all stuff that has to be accomplished. And it's not trivial stuff at all. So there's a whole bunch of work around that. Then there's like, well, we got to expand beyond Kubernetes. And then there's like, okay, how do we allow people to configure and like really tailor it for their environments? Are we talking about WASM? Are we doing like some kind of data plane plugin? We just introduced basically control plane plugins. We call them extensions. Are we doing something similar like that? There's a ton of stuff. We've got the folks at NetApp who are working on like FIPS 140-2 compliance. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, I mean, that's a real problem for people. It's insane. That's a problem. If that's a thing that people need, then like, let's solve that. So gosh, I don't know. I don't see an end to this, honestly. I think that the trick for us is our philosophy with Linkerd is that we want to be minimalist when we do it. We want to be composable. We want to be lightweight. We want to like follow the Unix philosophy as much as possible. So adding a whole bunch of features without turning it into like the kitchen sink, that's where things become nuanced and tricky. But I do want to solve it's a whole set of problems that I think Linkerd could solve for people that's not able to solve yet.
And hopefully your former experience that you've totally forgotten about with machine learning and natural language processing will come in handy there to make some cool stuff happen. I can imagine.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Could be.
I mean, right? Technology is improving all the time. I think that's where the really exciting things are going to happen is where you start getting AI mixing together with like a mesh service networks to improve how you run these things.
Yeah. I think there's already an AI service mesh out there, startup somewhere. So.
You were talking about the fact that Unix philosophy and making sure that you're minimal. And that sounded very advicey to me, which is great. Because my next question is, what advice will you have to projects that are just sort of starting out? Projects like CurieFence or CNCF projects or projects that want to join? How can they best build themselves to work in this space as successfully as you have?
So I think for CurieFence, like Linkerd, I think one thing you really have to get clear about is what's the relationship between the company behind it and the open source project? So I mentioned early on that one thing we decided early at Buoyant was we didn't want to sell Linkerd Enterprise because we thought it would put us in a difficult position where we'd be forced to choose for every feature, okay, is this like behind the paywall or not? And kind of like it has this weird relationship with the community. And I think if you look at Nginx and Nginx Plus, like you can see kind of how it's doable, but it's not that comfortable. So we decided, okay, Buoyant, basically we're going to make money with SaaS. And we've got this very cool thing called Buoyant Cloud that like talks to Linkerd. It's not like an open core, you know, or Linkerd Enterprise thing. But being very clear about that, I think is helpful because everyone understands you got to make money. Everyone understands there's a company here. People are used to working in this ecosystem where there are companies that make money and there's also open source projects. But what I think hampers adoption is when it's unclear or when it feels shady or when you're like, why are you trying to get me to use this? Are you trying to trick me into something? So being very clear about that, both obviously internally, but also communicating that relationship is, I think, is really fundamental to being successful. Another thing we've learned is that adoption is weird. This cloud native space, I don't know if it's, I've got to imagine other spaces are like this too, but there's a lot of fashion, there's a lot of fad, and there's a lot of people who are like, oh, this thing, I heard about it, and therefore it's the coolest thing, and therefore I'm going to dive into it, and I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to blah, 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 and then like 6 months off, they're off to the next thing. And being able to withstand that and being able to really kind of be able to pick apart who is using this thing for real and who is actually solving problems with it and who is actually like getting value out of it and who is like writing the blog posts and jumping from one hype wagon to the next. Being able to differentiate between those two types of usage is really valuable because then you focus your energies on solving actual problems. I think an example for us recently was around WASM. Now, it's awesome. I think it's like the coolest idea ever. And there's a ton of people who are super excited about WASM. We could not find anyone who was actually using WASM to solve problems or who had a really direct, concrete use case. And so we didn't do anything with it. And people ask about it. And we're just like, we're waiting for this to become a little more real before we're going to jump on it. And there's like 12 other decisions like that. So that's my other advice, I guess, is understanding the nature of adoption and being able to pick apart real adoption from buzz adoption.
You know, there's one application, Figma, that uses WASM, and it is like using
A
native application in your browser. It's the most amazing thing.
I mean, I use Figma literally every day. It's awesome. Like, that's a great usage. Sorry, I don't mean WASM as a technology at all. Like, I mean WASM for the service mesh as a way of like whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's like a way of testing the waters. Could I get some buzz out of this by saying WASM with cloud native or the service mesh? I don't know. That's just.
Yeah. And then I've got a whole set of advice, which hopefully will never come to relevance for you folks about what to do when like you've made this awesome open source project and then suddenly Google decides to compete with you and Amazon decides to compete with you and Microsoft decides to compete with you. And suddenly you're in this crazy, and IBM decides to compete with you. And suddenly you're in the situation where it's like you versus the four lumbering giants. There's a whole bunch of interesting stuff.
William, all we need to do is change the license to.
Yeah. That'll solve it. Right.
Yeah.
So that's always entertaining. But yeah, like I said, hopefully that won't become an issue for you.
So it's not just for, you know, Curie fans, it's also for the listeners at large. You clearly have a lot of experience and you're very eloquent at putting it to use. Don't mind me saying so. One of the questions I have, where can people follow you? Where can people learn more about thoughts that you have or that Linkerd has online? Do you have a blog or a Twitter account or something?
I have a service mesh that you can install on your Kubernetes cluster. I would start with that. Go to linkerd.io, install it, run it. Add yourself to adopters.md, and then we can talk. Now, you can follow me on Twitter, on WM. Like you said, that's probably the best way. I do a whole lot of writing, but you know, it mostly comes out these days as like Linkerd blog posts and things like that. So yeah, reading the Linkerd blog and then the docs is probably the best way to get most of my like written output. Yeah.
The reason I ask is because we are running up on time, and I want to make sure that we have space to fit in any other final thoughts that you have and where people could take the conversation further. Do you really want to share how to take down four lumbering giants with a single slingshot and a wad of gum? Like, how did you do that?
Well, there's this David and Goliath story is a story that has been with us for a long time for a reason. So, but maybe we'll save that for the next podcast.
This was a great show. I really appreciate you coming on, William.
Well, thanks for having me. I had a ton of fun. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I just said what was in my brain.
We're just going to say thank you so much. And we really hope Linkerd does well and continues to be awesome. And listeners, hope you enjoyed it. Have any questions, feel free to hit us up. And that's it. Again, thank you.
Thanks, y'all.